Barclays provided the spark to help me get my first job.
The spark that boosted my confidence online.
The spark to help grow my business.
With programs such as Barclays Life Skills that help people develop the skills to get into work, Barclays Digital Eagles that keep people safe online, and Barclays Eagle Labs that support entrepreneurs to innovate and grow, Barclays is sparking opportunities in your community. Search Barclays Communities to find out more.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. It's a quick shout out to B, who's just bought the Mystery Hour board game. Really looking forward to playing it with my son over the weekend. Well, unfortunately, B, none of the questions that pop up today will be... Well, they might, actually. They sometimes come around again. Who knows? Let's wait and see. And remember that my favourite contribution of the day, my favourite contribution of the hour, could put you in B's happy position without actually having to pay. A free Mystery Hour board game for my favourite contributor, either a questioner or an answerer. Everyone, it's open to everybody. It's an equal opportunity competition. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, if this is the first time you've stumbled across this programme or perhaps this feature, then I'm going to somewhat immodestly suggest that you're in for a bit of a treat. At least we think so, don't we? We rather like this. Quite a lot of you sending me a message about Zoe Gardner as well, who was on Newsnight last night. You know, great minds. I had that ready to play to you as well, but the Yvette Cooper clip was so long, I just didn't have time for the Zoe Gardner clip from Newsnight, but she was absolutely superb. I think I've retweeted it. If I haven't, you should be able to find it. Just really nailing exactly what the government is doing with the asylum seekers and refugees and how disgusting, how despicable it is. Utterly transparent, utterly gross. But we do not concern ourselves with such matters for an hour of a week, and that hour is now upon us. If you've got a question that needs an answer, 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And if you have an answer to the question that someone else has asked, then 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. There's not really any rules. We try to avoid repetition, and you're not allowed to look anything up. But apart from that, all human life is here. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Alan is in Liverpool. Alan, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Alan.
It's not going to win the board game because it's not that good a question, but it's been gnawing at me for ages. What was the first ever film to have a recognisable soundtrack where you could go out and you could buy what would have been back then, the LP or the singles, as opposed to just incidental music? I think, and I can't think of one earlier, I think it's The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman and Anne Bancroft in 67. I can't think of an earlier one that had an actual soundtrack with songs.
What about, was that 67, was it?
1967,
60,
yeah.
Surely...
Simon and Garfunkel.
No, I know that. I'm just... Surely Ennio Morricone... But Maurice Jarre, Jean-Michel Jarre's dad, wasn't he composing film music before that?
Yeah, but that was incidental music. I meant where you can go out and...
You would buy the album. It's not incidental music. It's written specifically for that film.
No, I'm talking about songs.
Oh, I see. You're talking about a film that contained songs that you could then go out and buy a sound. So not incidental
but
through me.
Songs that go through the film. So I'm not looking at James Bond who have just a theme tune or a theme song and that's it. But I mean different songs like Mrs. Robinson,
Hazy
Shade of Winter, April Comes She Will, all of those.
That is a beautiful album, isn't it? It's an absolutely seminal album. It's a superb film as well. So pop songs, really, that were also a movie soundtrack. Was that the first time?
I recorded the film for my 17-year-old stepdaughter to watch because I think she'd love it.
Yeah, it is an absolute cracker. And the music is, it utterly elevates it. Thank you, mate. I like that question a lot. It's got to be songs, whether they were written. Well, hang on, what about musicals, though? Alan?
Well, no, they were probably originally musicals anyway.
Yeah, so, but that's a film album you can go out and buy.
Yeah, but I said feature films, I didn't say musical feature films.
Oh, come off it. We're narrowing it down now. You've got a film of, Grease, that was a bit later than 67, wasn't it? But there must be something before that.
I'm not... I'm not looking at Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or anything like that.
No. So the characters aren't singing the songs.
The characters aren't singing. That's the crucial.
There we go. No, that's the distinction. The characters aren't singing the songs. Although, as a kid, I think I used to get Dustin Hoffman mixed up with Paul Simon a bit, actually, because of that musical crossover in that film. Alan, thank you. Glenn's in Brentwood. Glenn, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Being made redundant, like most people were in during COVID, I decided to set up my own company, which now involves a considerable amount of driving as I did before.
Okay.
My question is, why are there a considerable amount of potholes on country roads, less on A roads, but even considerably less than motorways?
I used to have a rule about motoring questions, but I've got older as over the years, and I don't mind them anymore. And I'm fascinated by potholes. I thought you were going to tell me that you'd set up a business fixing potholes. Because I have this theory. Someone's going to make a fortune now, Glenn, because I think that someone should look into a way of making a sort of galvanised rubber that you just pour into a pothole and it fills every little nook and cranny and create. I get very obsessive about potholes. I think they're very strange. But I think the answer might be quite obvious, and they just fix them more. The busier the road, the more important it is to fix the pothole.
Possibly. Keith, but when do they do that?
Keith is gesticulating at me, which means I might have got it wrong. What do you mean, speed? Yeah, so they've got to fix it because you're going so fast on the motorway. Yeah, so that's what I said. They fix them a lot more quickly. And the reason why they fix them a lot more quickly is because you're driving a lot faster on the roads, the relevant roads. You hit a pothole at 80 miles an hour, you're going to take off.
But when will they fix them, though? At night time when people aren't driving so much?
That's why I'm not going to give myself or Keith a round of applause. We'll have to get an answer from someone who's actually involved in fixing them. But if that's not the answer, Glenn, I'll give you the money myself.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, mate. 10 minutes after 12. I hope the new job's going well. James is in Malaga. James, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, James.
I'm a user of a white cane. I'm registered blind. Yes. But I've always wanted to know why and who decided they were white.
Does white, for visually impaired people, does white register more effectively than other colours?
No, I don't think so. I mean, not to me.
Well, maybe it does for everybody else.
I have some vision, but not a great deal. I mean, I qualified for a white stick, but I've never understood. Well, I just wanted to know why.
I presume it is. Again, the slightly obvious reason is that it's so that we know it's not a walking stick.
Yes, possibly, but I have had it in the past where people have assumed I was, you know, with one of those, like, what do you call those things that people go walking with? You know, the Scandinavian walking or something. No, the Scandinavian walking.
Yeah,
you know,
no, but that's. I mean, you're being a bit of a pedant here, James. You're quibbling a bit. I think the obvious answer is that if you're coming towards me with your white stick, I'm going to react very differently from how I would. I'm going to behave very differently from how I would if you were coming towards me with just a wooden stick.
Okay, but globally,
so it must be that.
Currently calling you from Malaga.
I saw.
It doesn't matter where I am in the world. Everyone knows. It's a white stick, a white cane,
yes.
And I've got a visual impairment. So somewhere along the line, surely someone...
Yeah, that's a different question. So that's when did it start? When did it start is what we want to know, perhaps.
Yeah.
You're on. I like it. I like it a lot.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, James. We shall try and get you an answer. Why the white stick? And your answer can encompass then both bits of the question, can't it? As in, when did it start? And presumably, we're right about why it is prevalent is because we will react differently. Thank you, James. Nicola's in Uxbridge. Nicola, question or answer?
It's a question, James. Hi, good afternoon.
Hello. What is it?
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question from my 4-year-old daughter. We were playing Pirates the other day, and she's rampaging around, shivering me timbersing.
Yes.
We wondered where that phrase started, shiver me timbers. And I did a sort of mystery hour kind of thing. Well, obviously, you know, it's because... you know, it's sort of like, oh, I'm quaking in my bones, you know,
yes.
Kind of shaking my bones. And then I thought, hang on, no, because it's the pirates who are shouting, shiver me timbers. Why would the pirates be saying that they're scared?
Because it's not about them. It's not about them. Well, I mean, when would a pirate be scared? It's not a trick question. It's not a trick. Yeah, you do. When would it? When if you? I mean, what is a pirate on usually?
The boat.
Yeah, and what would be the scariest thing that could happen when you're on a boat?
Many things, I guess.
Well, that's true. But if I rule out attacks by other boats, what's the scariest thing? Come on, what happens in the films? What happens
if the boat starts sinking?
It's a storm. A storm. And the ship is getting battered by waves and weather. What happens to the timbers?
Okay, yeah.
They start shivering, they start shaking. You don't sound convinced.
That makes a lot of sense.
So the timbers start shaking and the pirates get scared. So it means both literally shivering my timbers and I'm scared because my timbers are shivering.
Then why do they shout it? I don't want to draw attention to the fact that they're scared.
That's a different question entirely, Nicola.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. You see, I've given you the etymology. I've given you the origin of the phrase. Shiver me timbers. Also, they're not, you know, they're not superpowers. They're not superheroes. They get scared. I mean, I can't force you to accept my answer, Nicola, but I'm quite hurt.
I will try to explain this to my 4-year-old when she gets home from school.
But it's not fear necessarily either. It could just be shock or surprise. Shiver me timbers! You know the timbers are shivering. I'm sure your 4-year-old will understand. But I'm not going to take the round of applause in case someone else comes with a better answer, as if that's ever going to happen. Thank you, Nicola.
I should have asked the other question she asked me about rockets.
Well, there's always next week. 12:15 is the time. I like that question. I like the answer. I always get confused when people seem enthusiastic about my answers. I go to 12:15.
With Now, discover your fast track to Formula One.
And it's lights out and away we go.
Catch all the speed.
Wow.
Get all the control.
We're going wheel to wheel.
And feel all the drama.
No. I think we're going to see some good racing.
Cut to the chase and stream the new season live with a Now Sports membership.
Now strap in and welcome along to the ride.
Let's go.
Your shortcut to Formula One is Now. 18 plus Sky Sports content streamed via internet. Full terms apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's caused a lot of problems, this one, on the texts and tweets, which I normally ignore during Mystery Hour, but I use them as a sort of thermometer to take the temperature of a certain question. It's Alan's question about the first film soundtrack. I need to be very specific on this. It's a film that contained songs not sung by anyone in the film. Background music of songs that you could then go out and buy as a soundtrack. What was the first one? So it can't be The Wizard of Oz, can it? Because they sing songs in The Wizard of Oz. The characters sing the songs. Someone sent me a tweet and it said Westfield Story. And I thought, what's that about? Westfield Story? Obviously, it would be predictive test. You were trying to say West Side Story, which again is a musical. So the characters are... So it's not that. You can't... It's not... So to clarify that. That's the point. Westfield Story would be a rubbish musical, wouldn't it? Well, not necessarily. It could be one of those modernist sort of experimental efforts. So that's what we are looking for. Why are there so few potholes on motorways? I kind of know. At least I think I know. It's kind of obvious, but I'd like it to have expert qualifications, that one. Why are white sticks used by visually impaired people? And we want to know when it started from. And why do pirates say shiver me timbers? Which I've answered very effectively, but Nicola, I felt, was quite inappropriately ungrateful for my answer. James is in Ipswich. James, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Carry on.
It's to do with the pothole question.
Excellent.
So you were pretty bang on the money, to be fair. The classification is the volume of traffic that particular road takes. You will invest more money and more effort into maintaining that to a better condition than other roads.
Yes.
But the speed doesn't really have anything to do with it.
That was Keith. That bit was Keith.
Well, Keith was wrong.
Well, welcome to my world. Welcome to my world, James. So that's it. The busier the road, the more effort there. And when do they do it? When on a motorway, for example, when will the pothole dudes move in?
Well, they'll generally do it overnight when it's quieter.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Qualifications? Yeah.
Highway maintenance engineer.
So you do it, do you? Do you actually do it?
I don't. I design the repairs. I don't actually physically do them.
Get you, yeah. Eh? Fancy pants.
Well, yeah.
Is there a fortune to be made for someone coming up with a really easy, simple way to repair potholes?
To be honest, what you described is not really practicable. It's quite complex.
That's what they said to Thomas Edison, mate.
Well, yeah. True.
And Bill Gates. They said that to Steve Jobs once, James. What you described is not really feasible. You've got like a rubbery gravel. Rubbery gravel is what you want, and you pour it into the hole, and it seeps into all that, and it creates a perfectly tight seal. That's what you.
I just feel you're slightly reinventing the wheel somewhat.
Is that what you do already? Is it
generally? Yeah.
How much rubber though is there?
Well, I don't know that.
No, it's the rubber is the secret. You melt the rubber to get the rubbery gravel, and then that just creates a tighter seal.
The effect.
Yes. Anyway, you've got a round of applause.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You can have that one for nothing, James. You can take it to your design, your laboratory, and see rubbery gravel. That's what you probably need to come up with a fancier name. John's in Bristol. John, question or answer?
Hello, James. Been a while, mate.
How are you, John?
I'm all right, mate. And you?
Yeah, mustn't grumble. Okay. On we go.
I got a question for you.
Here we are.
Here we go. Going back through time, you had court jesters and jokers, and coming up to date, you've got comedians.
That's correct.
What is the oldest recorded joke? Ooh. There must be a joke scribbled on an old wall.
That's what it will be. Where? Would it be like hieroglyphics?
Possibly, or it might be in an old manuscript or something.
It's going to predate manuscripts, I would have thought, but you don't know. I mean, could you do a joke? You could do a cartoon, couldn't you? Oh, I must say thank you to Tony Husband, the cartoonist, who sent me a lovely little package the other day after we were talking about some of his work on air. So you could do a cartoon.
Yeah, you could, I suppose.
But it's the older one.
Actually, like a written joke.
That
has come back through time. I mean, or like a one-liner.
Yeah, all right, you're on.
I mean, there's loads of one-liners, isn't there? I mean, I can think of one straight away. You know, what tree never grows?
Go on.
A lavatory.
Oh, very good. Yes.
Oh, that's a stinker, isn't it?
Is this what you rang in for, really? Have you done that thing again where you come on with a question and it's really just a cape under which you're going to smuggle in your own attempts at entertaining my listeners?
Oh, dear.
I shall find out. Well, I shall try to find out for you, John.
On you, mate.
What's the word? It's good to hear your voice, mate. Look
and you, mate.
Well, you hear my voice all the time, don't you, you silly sausage?
Well, I do, but even so, you know.
It's good to hear your voice, John. It's good to hear your voice.
I keep cursing you every time I lose on the board game, but never mind.
You guys, practice makes perfect. You should have your own questions in there, surely, by now. 24 minutes after 12. The world's oldest joke, please. Ian's in Wolverhampton. Question or answer, Ian?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Right, what it is, a few weeks ago, I was thirsty, so I went to my fridge, got a can of pop out of the fridge and drank it.
Yeah.
And I got brain freeze.
Oh, curses.
It is brain freeze.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? It's absolutely horrible. Is it medically bad for you?
Yes.
It's a good question.
Because it hurts.
It flipping hurts. So you presume it's doing something bad, don't you?
Because if I've got a headache or a migraine, I have to take pills, and it is dessert, but is it medically...
Is it doing you harm? Is it brain freeze? You got it from a can of pop. That's quite rare, I'd have thought.
It was ice cold.
Well, clearly. I mean, just really, what have you got? Is your fridge on high, or do you just like it like that?
No, I like drinking cold pop.
Because it'd be an ice lolly for me, normally, if I get a bit of brain freeze. It'd be a Zoom or something like that, not an actual drink. I'd rarely get it from a drink, but horses
for courses. I don't get it from ice cream or anything. I'll normally get it from pop.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you live and learn. All right, you're on. I'll find out. Is brain freeze medically bad for you? 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Tony's in Winchmore Hill. Tony, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James. I've got an answer.
Pirates, is it? Pirates.
Pirates,
excellent.
Indeed.
Carry on.
18th century English, to shiver is to rip something apart, to rend it asunder.
Oh.
So it's a bit like, I think, when I was waiting for you, I thought it's a bit like somebody saying, well, knock me down with a feather.
So splits, yeah. So not, yeah, knock me apart with shock.
So, so the cannonball.
So it's more about shock than fear, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with fear, actually. It's much later that Shiver was meant for that, you know, the involuntary skin movement.
Okay. Qualifications?
Academic, English academic.
Because that well, I mean, that's a very valid qualification, but quite a lot of pirate stuff comes from fiction, doesn't it? It's the fella who portrayed Long John Silver in an early production.
Yeah,
who is
Robert
it? Robert Newton. Yes, Robert Newton's portrayal of Long John Silver.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes,
that's where the accent comes from. There's no reason to think that pirates talk like we did when you first came on the show. That's all down to Robert Newton in the film, the West Country accent.
Yeah, but Milton uses the word shiver.
Does he?
In that context. Sorry?
In that context. In the context of splitting a piece of wood or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
it. If you whack a piece of wood really hard, as if with a cannonball, it will move before it splits apart. It will shiver. There you go. That's where you get the skin. That's
a beautiful answer. Round of applause for Tony, please.
Oh, it's my birthday as well.
Oh, look at that. Look at that, mounting a subtle bid there for the Mystery Hour board game prize, I think. Young Tony, whether or not it proves fruitful, only time will tell. 12:27 is the time, so I hope that Nicola's daughter is happier with that answer than mine. It looks like I was wrong, actually. Ollie's in Watford. Ollie, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Ollie.
So, my question is, I've reached the ripe old age of 30 years old.
Yes.
So, a lot of my friends have started churning out children.
Yes.
And as a result, many a weekend is now spent visiting these little babbers. And
lovely.
I'm quite competitive.
Yes.
I'd like to have a staring contest with them.
Okay.
And I have noticed that they literally just don't blink. Babies seem to blink once a minute, and I want to know why the babies blink so much less than adults, and why do we start to blink more as we grow older?
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure that babies... I mean, unless all of my friends' babies are anomalies, which I don't think they are, but I've noticed, and it's been a few weekends in a row, a staring contest with little children, which sounds odd, but they just blink. They just blink less. And there must be a reason why. I don't know if their eyes are smaller, so they don't need to blink.
Their eyes are more moist. They don't need to blink.
Or maybe it's something to do with processing with the brain and processing imagery because they're less developed. But I feel like there is a reason.
we shall find out. I mean, how much of your weekend do you spend having staring contests with babies?
I feel like I'll have to ramp it up if I don't get an answer.
Because it could just be you.
Risk of putting myself on a register.
No. 29 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Ollie. The staring contests with babies who blink so rarely. Not something I've ever picked up on in the past. Holly Harris is here now with your headline.
UK Export Finance can help your business grow overseas. Last year, we helped UK exporters access £7.4 billion of support by providing government-backed finance and insurance. We can help you win export contracts with attractive finance terms. Got orders overseas? Fulfill them with a working capital loan. Exporting to a challenging market? Make sure you get paid with the right insurance.
To get the exporter's edge, search UK Export Finance or call us on 0800 538 5111.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:33 is the time. Don't forget that the Mystery Hour is available as a self-contained podcast. And there must be hundreds of them. I don't know what you're doing. There's three bank holidays on the way. We just got the email through asking about which ones we're taking off, to which I like to reply, all of them. If you're doing like long car journeys, then the Mystery Hour podcast is actually pretty wonderful. It's an almost sort of limitless supply of entertainment going back a long, long time. And you can get it from Global Player. So the full archive available at Global Player, which you can download at globalplayer.com or just Google it and download it there. And then you can find it. Find the Mystery Hour archive. And there's you know, loads of them. And they're completely self-contained. It's not like you have to listen to the rest of the show. You can just pick up a Mystery Hour. And it's going to be a bit shorter than an hour because we cut out the break. So you've got And there are ads on it, but not in the way that they punctuate the programme proper. That's a nice phrase, punctuate the programme proper. So there you go. That's my little tip for the day for you there, is get the Global Player and get your mystery hours ready for the bank holiday car journeys. George is... Oh, come off it. Are you supposed to put phonetic spellings up of words like that? I know it's George Keith. It's where he is that I'm struggling with. I'm going to have a go at it. Nijmegen. George is in Nijmegen in the Netherlands. George, question or answer?
It's a question. I'll give you 3 out of 10 for your pronunciation of Nijmegen. Yeah. You say the G as if you're trying to get some phlegm in the back of your throat.
I knew that. That's Heiliggeist. That's what they used to say in church. Heiliggeist. Heiliggeist.
Heiliggeist.
So it's Nijmegen.
Nijmegen. You don't say the N at the end. Oh. Skip the N.
Right, let's start again. Well, no wonder they didn't put the phonetic spelling up there as
she tried.
I wouldn't know where to start. George is in Nijmegen. Well, George, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
Okay, in evolutionary terms, what is it with scabs? Why do they itch? Because presumably cavemen who got scabs that itch would scratch them and they'd get infected and they'd die and they wouldn't pass on their genes. But everybody's scabs itch. We've all survived in evolutionary terms. Why?
You may be coming at it from the wrong angle.
No, I'm not, am I?
You might be, because it might be that the itch is of evolutionary benefit in a different context.
In what way? To stop you itching.
Yeah.
To get you annoyed.
What is happening when a scab itches is not the reason why itching has had an evolutionary benefit. Itching has had an evolutionary benefit. So, for example, you would spot an insect crawling on you and take it off before it could bite you and infect you with malaria or something like that. So the scab causes itching for the same reasons that a mosquito does, but without the evolutionary benefit.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy that because surely there will have been a bunch of people whose scabs itched less and a bunch of people whose scabs itched more.
I don't know that
they
would
scratch less and then gradually through the generations.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's possible to have an itchless scab. I think the things that... I mean, what is going to give you the bigger evolutionary benefit? Getting a mosquito before it kills you or not having an itchy scab?
I'll give you that. The mosquito before he kills you.
Or anything else, any other evil insect, anything else that's on your skin, you know, the sensitivity of your skin. All sorts of things, burning, all sorts of things there. But the price you pay for the sensitivity of your skin is an itchy scab. Is an itchy scab. I've got all their albums.
Yeah, late 70s, I think.
It's John Peel. I'll put it on the board. But I'm liking my answer, George. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'll give you more for your answer than I gave you for your pronunciation of Nijmegen.
Yeah, so that's a 4 out of 10 then. Thanks a bunch. Thank you, George. Why do scabs itch? David's in Highgate. David, question or answer?
Answer, James. Good morning.
Afternoon.
Right, a couple of reasons. The first one is, if it's a white stick, it's most reflective to light, so you could see it from a greater distance. If it was another colour, say blue, green or red, it could be confused with another colour, so blue for green or red for green or yellow for blue.
Interesting.
So that's the two main reasons. Also, as an aside, there is also a stick for if you happen to be unfortunate to be blind and deaf and dumb, which is longer and I believe is striped.
Oh, really? I've never seen one of those.
You don't often, fortunately.
Where did it start? Do we know?
I haven't looked, to be honest, but I would imagine sometime in the 30s or 40s where motor cars were more...
Becoming more prevalent. Qualifications?
A wheelchair car driver for 5 years. I've done numerous NVQs in the past on health and safety.
Okay.
And
it's come up there. It's come up in there.
I can't remember it.
No, that's fine. Details, no worries.
That's what comes to mind.
Round of applause for David. There's still room for when it began to be answered, but he answered half of the question. Oh, he answered the question. It just turned into two questions, didn't it, in the course of being asked. Lee is in Twickenham. Lee, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
To the whether brain freeze causes neurological damage.
Or if it's medically, is it bad medically?
No, no. It's really just your blood vessels constricting, which sends a message to your brain, and it's a neurological response to pain.
So they constrict and then they open again. There's no lasting damage or change.
No, no damage whatsoever. Just a, like a response.
Why does it happen? Do you know?
Well, we respond to pain and touch through cold and hot.
Yes.
So our brain is to say whether something is hot or cold. And we have the same blood vessels in our mouths and connected to it throughout our body.
Qualifications? It's a terrible phone number.
I'm a psychologist, studied neurology.
Right, that'll do. Round of applause for Lee, please.
Thank you.
No, thank you. 12:39 is the time. And Chris is in Dunfermline. Question or answer, Chris?
It's a question, James. Question.
Carry on.
Okay, so why is it that when you hear somebody's car alarm or house alarm or whatever suddenly start to blare away, we say, ooh, that alarm's gone off.
Yeah.
When surely it's gone on.
Oh, yeah.
And also, once it's on, if you want somebody to stop it, you say, I wish they'd switch that off.
You do, even though it's gone off. Well, switch off and gone off are not the same thing.
Well, isn't it?
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's gone off like a... When it comes from a firework or something like that, doesn't it? It's gone off like a firework, or it's gone off like a... like it's released. So it wouldn't have been electric originally. It would have been released, in a sense. It would have gone off.
What an alarm?
So a bomb goes off as well, doesn't it?
Well, it does, yes.
So
yes,
that's,
you're right.
Yeah, so that's the same. I think that's what it is. It's not a bimetallic strip. It's not an on-off thing. It's gone off.
Well, the electric ones, I think, probably are. But
no, they are now, but it comes from a time, I mean, it's linked more to an explosive.
Yeah.
And it's not really working, is it, this answer, if you're honest? You're very polite, Chris. I salute your politeness there and your diplomacy. I sometimes embark on a flight of fancy, Chris, and halfway through I can tell I'm going to pull it off and we are actually going to arrive at a profoundly plausible answer. And then there are times like this.
Well, I wasn't terribly sure how plausible a question it was, to be honest.
I'm not sure about the question either, actually, if we're going to be doing full disclosure. But it is. I mean, it is initially, at first glance, it is counterintuitive that when the alarm goes on, we say that it has gone off. So I will put it on the board. And I can only apologise for my attempt to answer it. 0345 606 0973. Pete's in Brentwood. Pete, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
It is for the what was the first movie to use popular commercial tracks in their soundtrack?
Yes.
And it was The Graduate, which I think the question after actually mentioned.
Qualifications? How do you know that then?
Because I worked on a TV show for kids called Mini Movies, which was all about movie making.
And
part of it was about movie soundtracks. And in our research, that came up.
That was the first soundtrack, the first album of songs from a film that were not sung by characters in the film.
Yes, the first one with the first commercially released soundtrack was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Disney's version,
which comes from the that's incidental music, isn't it? And they've got the dwarves singing the songs as well.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? So really, Alan answered his own question. That's not happened before on Mystery Hour.
He didn't. He should get the board game.
Oh, controversial. But you definitely get a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's a little bit of trivia there that you're not going to forget in a hurry. But it's to you, Mrs. Robinson. It's Cecilia in that one as well. You're breaking my heart. You're shaking my confidence daily. The Vamps did a lovely cover of that. I'm just burbling now, aren't I? I should crack on. Sorry. June's in Enfield. June, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
Where does the term a barrel of laughs originate?
Ah, now, June, this is absolutely fine, and it's a brilliant question, but I have got a new producer working with me today, and she is unaware of the fact that we only do one origin of a phrase story a week. Otherwise, oddly... No, it's not you. It's not you, June, it's not you. It's Keith, actually. He is the old hand on the programme today, and he should have been looking out for this, because bizarrely, if we let one on, we get 100. So when Shiver Me Timbers went, lots of people would have thought that it sets your brain off in a certain direction. I bet it was Shiver Me Timbers that made you think about Barrel of Laughs.
Oh, Yes, it was.
That's how it works. It's live psychology on the radio, June. This is incredible. So it's fine, and it's on the board. I'm just reminding myself, really, and cautioning Keith that we don't. Okay. So we don't certainly don't want any more. But where does the phrase "barrel of laughs" come from? I like that. That's right. I know we shall find out. Oh, it might be a music hall song. Who knows? There's all manner of things it could be. So we need the barrel of laughs. We need the alarm going off. We need the itchy scabs. We need the blinking babies. We need the oldest joke. We've done the potholes, we've done the white sticks, and we've done the first film soundtrack. It is 12:45.
At Honda, we listen to the unexpected for inspiration. Like feet. All that tapping, stepping, stopping and starting. That's a lot of energy. Energy that could be used to charge a battery. The Honda CR-V Hybrid turns braking into charge for a more efficient drive. Which means less stopping for fuel. Honda, the power of dreams.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:48 is the time. We didn't have that, Will. You're wrong, mate. We didn't have the alarms question 3 weeks ago. I've checked. There's a note. I'm pretty sure we didn't. I'm bad at remembering things, but we didn't have it that recently. I'm sure. Brad's in Oldham. Brad, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. Hello. It's an answer.
Good man. Bring it on.
Sterling competition.
Yes.
Question. I'll give you an answer, and I will also give you and your listeners a tip as to how to help with sterling competitions and how to give you an edge.
Fantastic. Go on.
The reason for it is that the front of our eyeball, the colour part of your eye, the skin that covers that, called the cornea, is very, very sensitive, and that has to be covered by a layer of tears all the time.
Yes.
So every time we blink, our eyelids squeegee a layer of tears over the front of our eyeball, which then evaporate. And when they evaporate, it causes you to blink again.
Yes.
So if you try to keep your eyes open, the tears evaporate, and you sooner or later have to blink.
Yes.
You can feel this sometimes if you've ever done it.
Yes, I am going to hurry you slightly, if I may, if that's okay, because there are quite a few answers still needed before home time.
That's
carry
okay. This is a quick version. Happens is as you get older, the structures that cause the chemistry to
So kids have thicker tear films than adults?
Basically.
There you go. Round of applause. What are your qualifications?
I'm an optician.
There you go. Fantastic. I bet your eye examinations take a long time, Brad. Go on, quickly. What's the tip for the staring competition in a sentence?
Keep your head back.
Yeah.
So your eyelids move closer together.
Ah, okay. And then just watch them. Also, that gives you quite a beady demeanour as well, which is going to intimidate your opponent. I had a staring competition with Colin Murray the other day when we were selling the big issue together in Covent Garden. I like to feel that I intimidated him with that stare off. Great work, Brad. Thank you. Sorry to hurry you, mate, but I always get conscious of the time when there are still a few answers awaited. James is in Belfast. Question or answer?
Hi, James. Yeah, I've got an answer for, I believe I've got an answer for the oldest joke question.
Fantastic. Go on.
So I believe that the first written language was by the ancient Sumerian civilization in Mesopotamia, which is like modern day Iraq.
Yes.
And a forensic anthropologist I read in a book on this once found a stone that had a joke that was written. Dog walked into a bar, I think it might have been like tavern or something.
Right.
But dog walked into a bar and said, "I can't see a thing, I'll open this one." And it's believed, nobody knows what the joke, why it's funny, it had to have been related to their civilization in some way.
Gosh.
But that's one of, if not the first ever documented joke, I believe.
There's another one from the Sumerians, actually.
Okay.
Which is something which has never occurred since time immemorial. A young woman did not, and I'm going to translate it as break wind, in her husband's lap, which also doesn't make sense.
Okay,
so what are your qualifications? Where did you get that one from?
I'm a researcher in evolutionary biology, and whenever I was doing my undergraduate degree, I did a forensic anthropology module where I wrote a paper on the evolution of language. So it's just from reading. I think it might have been from a Yuval Noah Harari book that I got it. You know, the
guy that did
author of Sapiens.
I think it might have been one of his books.
Cool. I mean, it is almost certainly going to be the Sumerians. There might be some dispute over which one it actually is, because they'll be discovered at roughly the same time. It's got you a lovely round of applause.
Thank you, Jim.
There's one from the 1600 BC about a pharaoh. Do you know this one? King Snofru.
I don't know.
How do you entertain a bored pharaoh?
How do you entertain a bored pharaoh?
You sail a boatload of young women dressed only in fishing nets down the Nile and urge the pharaoh to go and catch a fish. It's the way I tell him, James. It's the way I tell him, James.
You've got something about you, mate. You've got a bright future.
12:52 is the time. Ash is in Oldham. Ash, question or answer?
Hi, good afternoon, James. All nice right. to speak to you. First time caller.
Welcome,
always
welcome.
Love your show.
Thank you, mate.
Me and my mate, we call you James Neutral.
I don't think I want to know why. What have you got for me?
It's an answer to the question for the alarm.
Good man, for the alarm. Why do we say an alarm goes off?
Because for any alarms we set off, like security or fires, we set them as an... They are on when, even in a car or a security alarm, they are already on. So if anything happens, goes wrong.
So you turn it on.
They are already on.
That's what I mean. So you put the alarm on, and it's not off. It's etymologically fascinating. That so when you leave the house, you put your alarm on, even though it's not making any noise. The alarm is on.
Exactly. That's always all the time on, and then it goes. When it happens, something happens. It will then go off.
Yeah. So it's primed in a way. I love that. Yeah, of course. Blimey, it's obvious when you think about it. What are your qualifications?
I'm studying being electrician level 3.
Oh, blimey. You'll never be short of work.
I hope so.
No, you won't. Round of applause for Ash.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you, mate. Likewise. And thank you for the kind words. Everybody today has been very kind. I sound like the Elephant Man. You've all been most kind. Mark's in Gypsy Hill. Question or answer?
I have the answer, James.
Go on, then.
There was a gentleman who was alleged to invent the white cane in about 1921. His name was James Biggs.
Biggs.
He was an artist who lost... Yeah, Biggs. And he lost his sight.
Okay.
And he could no longer be an artist. And he was concerned about the traffic in his area. And so he took his artist skills and painted his stick, his walking stick, white, so traffic could be more visible of him. And that's the alleged rumour of where that started from.
Love it. A lot of qualifications?
I unfortunately spent 3 years as a blind person, so I wanted to know where all that stuff came from.
And then you stopped being a blind person?
Yes, I had a very good doctor, and after 8 hours of surgery, she managed to restore my eyesight to as good as it is now.
Wow, well, that's a great tale. I mean, it feels almost a bit inadequate now to give you a round of applause, given that the doctor gave you your sight back. But here it is.
Well, the applause should go to the doctor.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You should. Thank you, mate. And crikey. Hayley is in Guildford. Question or answer, Hayley?
It's answer.
We've gone off all in on the white sticks. Yes, which one?
The scab one.
Yes. Why do scabs itch?
So basically, when you cut yourself and you're having basically a healing process, there's higher blood flow, there's more inflammatory markers, including histamine, which makes the area itchy. So if you had an allergic reaction, it's widespread, but if it's just to a scab, it's localised, it makes it really itchy.
And
so
what,
everybody has itchy scabs.
What evolutionary purpose does histamine serve?
Histamine is more of a warning shot for your body that something's wrong.
Yeah.
So it's isolated to the area that something's wrong.
So it doesn't serve any purpose. It's actually bad to have an itchy scab because it makes you more likely to scratch it, and scratching a scab is not a good thing to do.
But the
production of histamine in all other contexts is an evolutionary positive.
It is, yeah.
So I was kind of right, but I didn't have the technical know-how to know why I was right, really. What are your qualifications?
Medical doctor.
Well, that'll do nicely.
That'll do.
Round of applause for Dr. Hayley. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Graham's in Lewis. Graham, question or answer?
It's an answer. It's about the music in films.
Oh, no. No. Yeah, what, a Stewart's inquiry?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Well, maybe. I'm not sure it qualifies.
Oh.
In the mid-50s, there's a film called The Girl Can't Help It.
Yeah.
And there's music in the films, and the original artists appear as themselves in the film playing the music.
No, that doesn't count.
They don't take any part of the actual
doesn't
story.
Matter.
They're not acting.
Nope.
So it doesn't.
Nope.
No.
No. No. No. No. Doesn't matter, does it? Because they're not. They're not. They are performed in the film.
I think it's, well, I think they're miming, quite honestly.
Yeah, but don't be so pedantic. It's got nothing to care whether they're made. It's a Jane Mansfield film, isn't it? Do you know who else is in it?
Fats Domino, Little Richard.
My great uncle Edmund.
Eddie Cochran.
Edmund,
if you like 50s music,
Edmund O'Brien. Edmund O'Brien is in it. He's the second male lead.
Oh, right.
He's not really my great uncle. Just in case. Right. No, just in case. Yeah. But anyway, you're not getting a round of applause for that. Sorry.
No, I thought it's worth a try because it is earlier than The Graduate.
It is, but the songs are, because you could go for The Jungle Book or something like that. The songs are performed in it. That's the point. So The Graduate is the first film soundtrack to contain music that was not performed by anybody in the actual film, which is a lovely little bit of trivia. So what didn't we get then? Barra laughs. Poor old June in Enfield is the only one that's going to be going home unsatisfied. We've got the alarms, we've got the scabs, we've got the brain freeze, we've got the oldest joke. Oh, June, I'm sorry. Let me think. Let me ask Sheila Fogarty. What's the origin of the phrase barrel of laughs?
Absolutely no idea.
Oh, come on. Just make something up. It's only June.
Oh, gosh. Barrel of laughs. Was it something to do with fairgrounds?
That's what I was about to say. Comes from the fairground. I mean, it's sarcastic usually, isn't it? You say something's
a barrel of laughs,
they're not very funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to give it to Alan, actually, because that soundtrack question turned out to be so interesting, I think.
Can I Google it, or is that breaking the rules?
You can't Google
it. No, I mean at the end of the...
Yeah, of course you can.
Don't throw it to me yet.
Where does it come from?
Googling.
So I'm giving it to Alan in Liverpool, the film soundtrack question, I think. Don't you? Is that a popular choice? Are we happy with that? Excellent. That's it from me for another day.
No.
What?
Go on then.
You're looking it up now.
Yes.
You can't do that. If you missed...
it's awful. The reason is awful. I don't even want to share it with you.
Oh, yeah. That's how you build up tension. You can tell she's done this before. Stay tuned. Sheila Fogarty at 4 o'clock. 5 to 4 today. We'll tell you where the phrase. if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player. Remember what I told you about the Mystery Hour podcast as well, and rewinding and pausing when you're listening live. So download Global Player for free, either from your app store or just head to globalplayer.com. Tom Swarbrick with you at 4. And now it's time for a barrel of laughs.
I'm afraid it's not.
It's
really not.
No.
My main theme today is the lack of hope in our politics. Cheer up, everyone. It'll be fine.